Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so Kevin Durant was on stage at Fanatics Fest, the first annual Fanatics Fest, and doing a Q&A with Kay Adams when he found out that he was traded to the Houston Rockets. He was very happy about that. He and his agent were jubilant over that from what we saw from video. Afterwards, after that panel session that he did a one-on-one with Kay Adams, who asked him, how dangerous are the Rockets now that they have Kevin Durant?
We shall see. We shall see.
Kevin, how dangerous? What do I need to know?
Should be a solid team. I mean, they won 50-plus games last year, played a great season. But all this stuff takes time and work and effort and execution, so we'll see what happens.
Okay, I like the answer. I like the promises being made, no nothing.
Listen, Kay, this is not a pep rally. This is not me saying not one ring, not two rings, yeah. Not three rings.
Good job,
and even
Seth,
if it
yes.
was a pep rally, I know that you can't say stuff at pep rallies that you used to be able to
not
say
anymore.
Because these bastards are always recording everything.
That's right. That's right. So I like that answer. Now, the other question, and we're going to hit best case and worst case scenario with this trade. If you're just waking up, Kevin Durant, a Houston Rocket, as you've probably heard, we'll hear what people around the NBA are saying about this deal. We'll do Acknowledge Me at 7:20 on the show today. Kevin Durant, what is your message to heartbroken Phoenix Suns fans?
Last one for you. A lot of heartbroken Suns fans right now. What would you like to say? That's not true. No, literally, heartbroken Suns fan right over there.
I just felt like, they wanted me to go. So it's like, I'm glad we both, they got what they wanted and I got what I wanted. So we can move on and good luck to them going forward. And I always remember my time there, but we're on something else.
Yeah. I think he's talking about the organization. They wanted me to go.
Yeah.
He probably should have been more clear in that because she asked about the fans themselves.
Pointing at a fan that was wearing a jersey.
I guess that's where...
That guy wanted me to go right there.
It's honestly one of the things about social media that I hate for athletes. It's that they see all the negativity and it ends up... It's impossible not to just kind of start to feel like, oh, that's the way the fans feel about me.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happened with DeAndre Hopkins after he left. By and large, the vast majority of Texans fans felt like, man, what the hell? This is all Bill O'Brien's fault. I hate you, Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby. Why did you do this?
Yeah.
But because DeAndre sees various Texans fans, the ones that would say, screw him anyway, we don't want him or whatever, a very small minority of Texans fans, that he sees that, then he lashes back against Texans fans, and then otherwise well-wishing Texans fans start to think like, well, whatever, DeAndre.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love Durant. Durant, don't take it personal because some of the people on social media are saying good riddance.
Good luck with that advice to Kevin Durant. Don't take it personal.
Yeah, I know.
That horse is left
the barn. He's not afraid to mix it up on social media.
Yeah, like that's that. We cannot put the toothpaste back in the tube on that one.
You will never. The Rocket, you will never get 100% approval rating from fans.
Yeah.
The Rockets could win the next two championships, and there will still be three guys on Twitter who are complaining about how they could have done it easier with Jalen Green.
Yes.
And Kevin Durant will see those tweets.
Yeah, probably so. All right, best case and worst case scenarios for this deal. And I think the package that they gave up and the fact that they didn't have to give up some of the things that the Suns undoubtedly wanted in this deal. I'd have a hard time believing that the Suns didn't want Jabari Smith or Tari Eason or both in a trade for Kevin Durant. They held on to them. They held on to a bunch of assets in this trade. I think the Rockets won this trade based on what's coming in and what's going out. The best case is that they win the NBA championship next year. That is firmly in play right now for the Houston Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
That they win it for the next couple of years if they re-sign Durant. And that'll be another big thing that we still have to talk about is there is downside to this deal. We don't know what the contract extension is going to look like for Kevin Durant. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And as far as the draft compensation, though, goes, as we talked about, this is not hindsight reasoning. The Rockets, in a good way, almost had too many first-round picks. And you're still in that quote. You still have that quote unquote problem. Have too many first round picks, but you can never have too many first round picks. They can use those as creatively as they want, but they already have enough young developmental guys that just weren't getting as many minutes as you'd like in Reed Sheppard, Cam Whitmore, etc. That you only had to give up one first round pick. This year's 10 that you're going to have to try to shoehorn that in if you drafted a guy into a role that he might not see the court for a while.
Yes.
So this the second round picks I couldn't care less about. I think this was really good composition, but we'll miss Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks brings so much more than just his actual production on the court. It's the whole culture fit. I think part of it is you could look at Dylan Brooks and say, hey, man, you know what? Job well done.
Yeah.
There is an edge to this team now that they simply did not have when Udoka took over.
Yeah, and Dylan Brooks had to be in there, too, because of the salaries. You got to make the salaries match up. And my hope was, I mean, this mirrors very closely the hypothetical trade that you and I both gave a thumbs up to like 2 weeks ago. Something built around Jalen Green and the 10th overall pick, knowing that you'd have to throw a few more guys in there to match Durant's $50 million salary. I was hoping it would just be filler, like Jock Lawndale and Aaron Holiday. You know, just enough guys to get the number up to where it needed to be, that the main focal point would be Jalen Green and the 10th overall pick. That Dylan Brooks is in this trade does cause a little bit of pain. But the best case and worst case, the best case we all agree, is they can win an NBA championship. I think even the biggest Durant skeptics out there would think that this team is capable of winning an NBA championship in spite of what you feel about him. The worst case, I don't think, is all that bad either with this team. To me, the worst case is Durant's injured all the time. You give him a bloated contract, which you have to work around for a few years. And, you know, the 2 or 3 years that he's here, you don't end up winning anything. He's washed at the end. I'm looking at a tweet from someone at Red Nation Blogger that lays this out. In 3 years, when Durant is, quote, washed and the window is, quote, closed, Amen Thompson will be 25, Alperen Şengün will be 26, Tari Eason will be 27, Jabari Smith will be 25, and Reed Sheppard and Cam Whitmore will be 24.
Right.
Like, when Durant is in, like, the worst case, if he's injured all the time and he gets sunsetted out of the league because he can't stay healthy and he's expensive, you've got six guys that you used first-round picks on that are presumably still with the team that are all, the oldest one is Tari Eason at age 27.
Right, and it is. Like, you're not trying to be too clever. I wouldn't want Raphael Stone to pretend that he knows exactly what's going to happen 3 or 4 years from now. GMs don't operate that way. But if you just look at the composition of the team, that was one of the youngest teams in the NBA of the playoff contenders, and that it's to round it out and take, you already kind of had your long-term plan or developmental plan in place. It's okay to bring in. This isn't bringing in a slew of aging veterans. This isn't pulling some move the Lakers might make where you just bring in a bunch of name brand guys and hope you can get the last dying gasp out of a bunch of them. This is a balanced approach to old and new, to veteran and young players. So it feels right in terms of this doesn't all of a sudden make the roster look lopsided in any way to me.
No, I don't think so.
If Durant is injured all the time, you still have a defense without Dylan Brooks, albeit, but you had one of the best defenses in the league last year, and that was enough to sustain you to where you got to.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the moves you can make on the margins to improve the offense, that's still there if Kevin Durant can't play a bunch.
Well, and the young guys are all going to, presumably they're going to improve as basketball players. They all work hard, you know what I mean? Like, Amen Thompson has not reached his ceiling. Tari Eason and Jabari Smith have not reached their ceiling. Reed Sheppard and Cam Whitmore haven't even gotten on the floor yet, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're all going to improve also.
Yeah, that's the way Raphael Stone went about this, I think, was textbook. Hey, the deal is there. We can make it. We know that it would help us, but we don't have to make this move. There's other things we can do, so I'm not going to overpay.
Yeah.
And he just bided his time. Phoenix just waited and waited to see if somebody else would sweeten the pot, and it didn't happen. So Raphael Stone, I think, handled this really, really well. I felt like he was in the driver's seat the entire time.
He'll get acknowledged in about 9 or 10 minutes here for what he did. Not just
unless something happens.
No, not just
unless it's breaking news
in the next 9 minutes. So, and I think too, just taking the best case and worst case scenario approach to this thing, the best case for the league especially in light of the fact that Oklahoma City won the NBA title last night. It looks like they're built to last. I mean, we just talked about the Rockets being built to last. OKC, if this is the group they want to keep together, really, really built to last. Ton of first-round picks. Average age, they're one of the youngest teams in the league. They're, for now, one of the least expensive teams in the league. They got all kinds of cap flexibility. Sam Presti's done an incredible job. The best case for the NBA is that, in my opinion, is that these two teams, the Rockets now with Durant and OKC, who seem to be the next big thing, are facing off in the Western Conference Finals for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
That this turns into some sort of, and now some may say, well, the league probably wants Luka involved or LeBron in his waning years or Steph or whatever. I just think in terms of all the storylines and the matchups and everything else, especially when you consider the circle of life aspect with Kevin Durant starting his career with that franchise, with Oklahoma, yeah, really with Seattle, but starting it with that franchise, OKC, and now finishing up with the Rockets, having 2 or 3 years of those two teams playing meaningful basketball against each other in the postseason would, I don't know, I live in Houston and I'm saying this, I think it would be incredible.
You know what, honestly, too, as far as whatever the narrative ends up being about Kevin Durant and his career, if he can win a championship with this team, this is a situation that would be just about perfect, which is he's coming in to help put a team over the top, but it's not with the image of an artificially constructed super team. It wasn't him ganging up with a couple other superstars or anything like that. If the Nets had won a championship, the narrative would have been like, oh, yep, Durant just needs to have the perfect situation, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
This is very clearly, okay, we're bringing this guy in to help put the franchise over the top.
Right.
But it doesn't feel like the annoying super team construction.
No, and the Golden State fans would be like, well, that's what he did with us. He came in and put us over the top. And it's like, you won the championship the year before, and you won 73 games in the year that the year before Durant came in and lost in Game 7 to LeBron James. Like, no,
only the dumbest Warriors fan would try to, that doesn't, would deny that that
we
was
we must
scenario.
Combat the idiots, Seth. That's what we have to do.
Only the dumbest Warriors fan or the Silicon Valley executive that just went a little too far with the LSD microdose.
Maybe.
To create my own reality.
That's right. What are people saying around the league about this trade? Kevin Durant to the Houston Rockets. Here is Kendrick Perkins, of course, Texas's finest, Kendrick Perkins from the Golden Triangle over there, from Beaumont, and I believe makes his home here in Houston, if I'm not mistaken. I think they bring this up in this bit of audio here, but this is Kendrick Perkins on the broadcast last night on ABC talking about the Houston deal or the Durant deal from a very, very Houston angle.
This may sound country and foreign to y'all, but this is the H-Town flavor, right? Hey, man, say, man, Kevin Durant is on the way to H-Town, man. We talking about Bun B firing up to getting the trill burgers ready.
Right.
Little Kiki Paul Wall, Slim Thug,
right,
pulling out the slab with the super poker rims, popping the trunk with the KD lights. See, it's foreign to you, but H-Town know what I'm talking
language.
About. You know
why? That's where you live. You better know it. Represent.
You're welcoming Kevin Durant, and now you're legit title contenders.
Legit
title contenders. Yes, they struggled in the half court set. They also struggle with three-point shooting.
Right.
Now you've got KD. Amen Thompson is still there. Tari Eason. The reason I bring up those two guys is because they bring what you need in today's game, what we're witnessing right now in the NBA Finals, and that's elite perimeter defense.
Not even to mention, man, with that two big man lineup becomes a three big man lineup where you actually have spacing. And I like that.
Who the other three is the best shooter in basketball?
Yeah, I was like, hey, where I'm kind of skeptical of having two big men out there at once. Oh, yeah? We're going to add a third.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, he's going to space the floor for you, and he's one of the best shooters in the league.
Here's his effective field goal percentage for the last 12 years right here. And it's a number with a six in front of it.
The spacing alone, just putting Kevin Durant out there and all of a sudden opening everything up.
Yep.
It has that effect, kind of like how you're missing Jordan in the lineup just because of the way it makes things easier for everybody else.
Yeah.
You put Kevin Durant on the team, and all of a sudden everybody else becomes better shooters because they've got more wide open shots, because they've got more options. Fred VanVleet becomes a better point guard because he's got more options and more open guys. There's a lot to like about this, and there's a few things I'm concerned about, but they're dwarfed by far by the potential positives.
All those possessions in the playoffs against Golden State where Jalen Green is just dribbling into nowhere and picking up his dribble and driving to the hoop with 10 arms, raised up, knowing exactly what he's intending to do, which is try to force buckets because he can't score any buckets in this series. Those are Kevin Durant's possessions now.
Also, I know as far as Kendrick, I wonder how much of that, I don't know how much of that would have sounded foreign to people from outside of Houston. A lot of it was just more maybe the Hey May stuff or whatever, but obviously you named a bunch of rappers that are like pretty known to people, at least,
Hey Maine, Say Maine, Kevin Durant is coming to Houston, Maine.
And then he cited Bun B. Trillburger. People wouldn't necessarily know Trillburger outside of Houston.
Right, Lil Kiki, Slim Thug.
I always wondered, like, okay, yeah, but how much of the, the rap legends from our young adulthood or youth really resonate with the youth? Nico said, when Nico was on the Greenlight podcast, he said the guy he was most excited to have met was Slim Thug.
Okay.
That was the one there. He's just kind of, like, blown away when he met Slim Thug.
Yeah, man. So this will be good. Kendrick Perkins likes the deal. Independent of all the Houston part of that, I thought the points he made at the end were spot on, which is they stunk in the half court. They stunk shooting threes. You went and got the best half court basketball player, best shooter off the dribble in the NBA last year by this little stat called field goal percentage was Kevin Durant. He's still elite. When he's on the floor, he is still elite at putting the ball in the basket.
Kendrick Perkins mentioned threes. He's not a volume 3-point shooter, but he's well above 40%. And again, when it comes to the spacing and opening up things for people, you have to respect him as a 3-point shooter, which is the slough off of him and the effect, the extra syrup that dribbles off the pancake because he's on the floor is just going to be immense for these guys.
This was the worst take yesterday, not given by Skip Bayless. Skip Bayless had a horrible take on Tyrese Halliburton's injury that we read a little bit earlier, where he basically 5 minutes before he shredded his Achilles.
And to put it into context, this is 4 minutes before he tore his Achilles.
Okay.
A lot of people that saw it really didn't realize that, and it looks even worse then. But it's still bad.
Yeah.
If you take into context, this is 4 minutes before Halliburton tore his Achilles.
The Pacers brilliantly took the big game pressure off Halliburton, who routinely no-shows, by planting the, quote, injury excuse that the media swallowed whole.
Oh, we swallowed it whole, did we? Yeah.
4 minutes later, Tyrese, and they're showing it on TV right now. That's tough to watch.
His low-top sneakers swallowed up his Achilles.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Tough to watch. So that was a bad take. Stephen A. Smith, though, with just an awful take on what the Rockets should do now that they've made this trade for Kevin Durant, and more importantly, I guess for purposes of this take, that Dylan Brooks is gone, because Dylan Brooks and Russell Westbrook, those are two guys that don't get along. Stephen A. Smith, quote, since Dylan Brooks is gone, how about going after Russell Westbrook? The man is still a warrior. Ain't backing down from anyone. Can't underestimate his toughness and dependability. Not saying it's going to happen, but wouldn't mind seeing this for Kevin Durant and the Rockets at all. To hell with all the past nonsense. Let's all move forward. End quote. This guy is trying so hard to get Russell Westbrook a ring, man. Stephen A. Smith had a title level take-a-mania take before the playoffs that Russell Westbrook was going to be the difference in the NBA playoffs. That's what was going to get Dan
Which wasn't inaccurate in if you think that he might also, he's going to be as much, 50% of the time he's going to be as much of the problem as he is the answer. So the tone deafness for anybody in Houston that were to say that about, A, we've already tried that with Russell Westbrook and we saw all of the, spacing issues and what have you that it creates. And B, it's a double whammy because, Kevin Durant has tried it with Russell Westbrook already. Remember? Remember when he fled?
Yeah, exactly.
Of all the people that are going to say no to Russell Westbrook coming into this particular team, I would imagine Kevin Durant would be chief amongst them. He would do it very quietly.
Just a odd, weird, bad take. And that's why it's good that we have Magic Johnson on Twitter to really balance things out with takes like this one. Two-time NBA champion and future Hall of Famer Kevin Durant being traded to Houston will make the Rockets one of the favorites in the West next season.
That's just smart engagement right there, Sean. He takes something that is widely already known, and you put it out there where people are expecting to see hot takes. But because he's Magic Johnson, people might see it and think, oh, if they haven't seen or read anything else about it, they're like, wow, Magic makes a good point there.
Yeah.
That'll make him one of the favorites. Yeah. And there they are. They're anywhere from second to fourth most favored to win the championship.
Magic Johnson, inarguably one of the greatest businessmen among former athletes in the history of athletics.
Let's see how many. I know. He's just awful on X. He's awful on social media. Sean, you got 4,200 likes on that.
Yeah,
right?
I know. I think I do pretty well on X. I think I do a pretty good job on there. Maybe I need to flip things and be horrible on there, and I can be better in my business life.
I've dabbled in being a wholesome content guy.
Yeah.
I like once every few days I try to retweet a cute little baby animal doing something cute.
That's smart. It is good. It is
baby
good.
Baby goat jumping up on a pig's back or
people
something
like that.
That.
And then subliminally, they're like, I don't know what it is about this Seth Payne. I just feel good. When I hear his name, I feel good about this
guy. I feel
good
about humanity, or at least non-human mammals.
Right.
It's easy to feel about non-human mammals.
You know what I feel good about when I hear Seth's name? Small farm animals. For some reason, I feel really good about small baby goats and pigs and things
Seth
like that.
Seth Payne, is that the baby goat guy? Yeah, it is. It's the baby goat guy.
You want to be the baby goat guy. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be the goat.
He's the goat in football? No. Retweeting wholesome content.
Baby goats, yes.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
All right, let's get to acknowledge me. Let's acknowledge some of the big performances from this weekend. And we start it right off the top. We stick with the Kevin Durant trade. Rafael Stone.
Acknowledge me.
Okay, before we go through this list, this was Brian Windhorst on Friday saying that the Rockets. You finding it? Okay, you don't have it? Okay. All right, well, let's go through the list of things. This is Rafael Stone, masterclass in roster building here, Seth. Oftentimes, these NBA teams try to tank it, strip it down, build it back up. And sports are a zero-sum game. Not all the teams that tank can become good. There's not enough room. The musical chairs only have a couple open chairs. They've executed this roster build perfectly. I know that performance-wise, the ceiling, like they've lost in seven in the first round of the playoffs. I get it. They haven't gotten to the Western Conference Finals or anything. But in terms of the stated plan that they had, like they had literal phases to this that they publicly talked about. Phase one, phase two, etc. They accrued high draft capital.
Lots of it.
They drafted the right guys, by and large.
Yeah.
I mean, you could make the argument, hey, Jalen didn't get to the level that we had hoped he would as a number two overall pick. The guy picked right before him, Cade Cunningham, is an all-NBA guy. Now, Jalen Green just got you Kevin Durant. So, you know, they drafted the right guys. Hired the right head coach
in a situation where the reason they could get him partly was that was very much at the height of Me Too and everything else. And they were able to look at the situation and say, okay, he was let go because of a scandal that involved a woman, but it was not a Me Too type of scenario.
Right.
And a lot of other teams were a little too bashful and gun-shy about it, where I give the Rockets a lot of credit for recognizing the situation for what it was and not worrying about how it might look to people who are uninformed.
Yep. Added the right vets. You know, added Fred VanVleet, added Steven Adams in a very shrewd trade. They traded for Steven Adams when he was done for the season. A couple years ago.
I was skeptical, and it ended up being exactly one of the things that this Rockets young team needed. Yeah, the Dylan Brooks was one of my more I'm happy to be wrong about that.
Yeah.
Happy to be 100% wrong about Dylan Brooks.
Yep, he was good for what they had him for 2 years, and again, like Jalen Green, helped you get Kevin Durant. And then the next phase is begin winning, which they did. You know, all of that led to 41-40. All that led to them improving by 19 wins 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Improving by another 8 wins this year, getting the number 2 seed in the Western Conference, and then the final thing before the big winning happens, add a big star. Mm-hmm. Accrue enough assets to where you can deploy them and go put the finishing touches on this thing.
And it's a star who's going to be 37 years old, but who is still very, very effective and one of the very best shooters in the league.
Yep.
And not not in the along the flavors of like an Ed Reed type signing or a Scottie Pippen or somebody like that. This is much, much different than those.
It is very different, no doubt about that. And I think the big thing in making that deal, Rafael Stone did not flinch. Here was Brian Windhorst on Friday saying that the Rockets, this is before the trade, making it very clear the Rockets did not want to give up all that draft capital that they have.
Houston is the team that can make the best trade and also is the best spot for Durant. And there's a connection there with Ime Udoka. Ime Udoka was an assistant coach for Brooklyn when KD was there. If Durant ends up in Houston, I think you've got a serious contender in the Western Conference there. However, Houston is really not motivated to dip into the stash of picks that they have. Specifically, guys, they have two future Phoenix Suns draft picks. That's what the Suns want back. They literally want some of the stuff back that they traded for Durant. The Rockets went out and acquired that stuff from Brooklyn with the possibility of making a Durant trade. But they don't want to pay that price right now. And they're basically wagering that the Suns' price will come down and they will make the deal.
I'll never forget the day they made that trade with Brooklyn, Seth, where they had all the Brooklyn picks. The Rockets did. Brooklyn had all those Phoenix picks from the original Durant trade of Durant going to Phoenix. And I'll never forget the day that trade got made. I'm like, why are they doing this? Like, they're just swapping a bunch of picks around. And man, Rafael Stone playing some four-dimensional chess there with these picks.
You know what? The really interesting part of this, too, is that Kevin Durant was one of the first superstar NBA players to be just 100% all about working with the analytics staff. And it's a little bit like an Astros dynamic here when a pitcher like Verlander comes in and can work with a really good analytics staff. It'll be interesting to see maybe how they feel like he should transform his game and become more of a volume three-point shooter perhaps or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
He's going to be 100% on board with that.
Yep.
Like I'm sure one of the things he's most excited about is sitting down with the analytics people and talking to the nerds about where they feel like, hey, maybe we can tweak things a little
bit.
Yeah,
I can see that. I can see that for sure. Last one here and acknowledge me on the Durant trade. Momster, Tari Eason's mom.
Acknowledge me!
Managed to inject herself into the rhetoric on this trade yesterday on Twitter. She's feisty on Twitter. She tweets a picture of Leonardo DiCaprio laughing, cackling with shades on, and saying, now y'all got to deal with me and KD cooking you on Twitter. LMAO.
I like that. I would watch that. They should start doing some kind of social media series of Kevin Durant and Momster responding to mean tweets or something like that.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
Be fun.
Let's do that once a week. That's all I need. 10 minutes once a week.
What could possibly go wrong? All right, Hunter Brown.
Acknowledge me!
Hunter Brown reminding us why he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. Actually, not even one of his best outings. And he was nails on Friday again. 5 innings pitched, 1 run, and was ready to throw hands when Zach Neto stepped to him after he hit him with a pitch.
Yeah. Yeah, and Neto, who crowds the plate like Biggio, is going to get hit every now and then. It's not like they're not trying to bean you. It made me go back and appreciate Biggio from back in the day. Mm-hmm. Biggio is always amongst the league leaders in getting hit, and it's not like he whined about it.
No.
He just like that's the price you pay for crowding the plate like this.
He strapped on his gigantic elbow pad and went out there and
he dressed himself up like a samurai warrior and took his medicine.
That's it, man.
Meanwhile, his Neto is acting like just a little snowflake, can't handle the repercussions of the actions that he chose.
Did you see the tweets? I think it was Apollo Media had it, where they were able to read Hunter's lips in the fracas there. Mm-hmm. And Hunter's like, what the F did you just say to me? What the F did you just say to me? I need to know what he said to him.
It is nice to see it. Hunter at this point, where things, you've got enough innings pitched now and everything where things are starting to separate a little bit on ERA. He's second in the league in ERA right now behind Sierra, second in all of Major League Baseball behind Paul Skeens. Skeens is at 185. Hunter's at 188.
Yeah, he's, man.
Then you got to go up to Max Fried at 205.
Yeah. There's been some good pitching performances this year in the American. Fried's a Yankee now. Tarik Skubal is going to be in the mix. Hunter Brown. The odds will come out sometime this week on MVP and Cy Young. If he's not top two or three in Cy Young in the American League, something is wrong. Self-aware C.J. Stroud.
Acknowledge me!
C.J. Stroud at the Fanatics Fest when he was asked, I believe again by Kay Adams, hey, And she had to have known that there was something there when she asked this question. I don't know. She asked C.J. Stroud, you're going to hear the question. Do you have any advice for Caleb Williams heading into year two?
You're going into your second year. CJ's going into his third year. Any advice that you would give to Caleb on handling that, on slowing the game down, on those defenses figuring you out, as everyone likes to say?
I don't know if Caleb likes my advice. Loud display.
Okay, and obviously
she knew exactly what she was doing.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, she's really good at stuff like that. See, there's not a chance in hell she didn't remember.
Gotcha. Caleb was up on the stage, by the way. I should have set that up a little bit. He was sitting two seats down from CJ and had a huge laugh over. For those who don't know what we're referring to, CJ and Caleb had a moment on the field after the Texans beat the Bears this year where CJ kind of little broed Caleb Williams. Like, hey, man, don't worry about the turnovers. It's all going to be good. It's all going to be all right. And Caleb looked like he wanted to hear advice. Caleb looked like he would have rather gotten a terminal illness diagnosis in that moment than get advice from CJ Stroud.
The biggest thing, honestly, and going back and watching that, is that he opened up with, don't worry about those mistakes you made. That's the...
Yeah.
That part of it was...
That almost felt right, like a dig, you know?
Yeah. I don't. He didn't mean it that way, but I could see why people outside of Houston took it the way they did.
Yep. Speaking of Fanatics Fest, there were the Fanatics games, and Tom Brady won.
Acknowledge me!
I'm wondering what they are. I've got the rundown here, Seth. Tom Brady wins the inaugural Fanatics games, $1 million prize. He was the winner, which pitted athletes and celebrities against fans in 8 competitions this weekend at the Fanatics Fest in New York City. Brady finished atop the 100-person leaderboard with 399.1 points, taking home $1 million in the process. He's going to give $5,000 to each of the 50 fans who compete in the event, and then he's going to donate the other $750,000, I guess that would be, to charity. So Brady's not keeping any of the money, but the events that they had were, the competitors took part in 8 sports-themed skills competitions. Quarterback skills, basketball shooting, like around the world, you know, where you shoot from each area of the floor. Soccer goal scoring, baseball pitching accuracy, a washer-dryer hockey shooting challenge, a WWE superstar entrance, which was basically judged like you judge figure skating. You know, you had 4 judges there. A UFC striking challenge, and a closest-to-the-pin golf challenge. I would have predicted Brady as the winner of this if I'd known these were the events beforehand.
The UFC striking one is interesting, since his wife, when they got divorced, did end up with her jujitsu instructor, who has since then broken up with Giselle because he couldn't handle all of the public scrutiny and everything that comes with being the guy that broke up Tom Brady's marriage.
They had a kid, though, right? Didn't they have a kid?
Did they have a kid?
I think they did, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think they might have, yeah.
He had Brady's kids for a little bit.
Yeah,
So I wonder if... I wonder if Tom Brady would just sit that one out. Tom Brady doing some kind of barnstorming charity tour where he competed in events like this again. People would pay a lot of money just to go against Tom Brady in just some kind of a skills competition like this. Or they would put up money for their local high school quarterback to go against him. And you could raise a lot of money for charity.
Yeah. The one bit of video that surfaced from this thing that I saw, there were a couple that were not flattering. One was Joe Burrow doing baseball pitching, where he threw it. I mean, it was basically like some of these rappers that do the first pitch at a baseball game where they've clearly like never picked up a baseball and they spike it almost into the ground. Yeah. Joe Burrow did that. Joe Burrow had an awful pitch.
Did CJ participate in that?
I don't know if he did or not. I don't know if CJ participated.
My quarterback doing anything like that.
I don't know if CJ participated. Well, I saw him shooting baskets, so he was definitely part of the overall event. He did really well shooting the basketball. He was fine. Cody Rhodes, WWE superstar, should never have said yes to shooting a basketball, ever.
Oh, yeah?
Ever. And he's one of the biggest stars in WWE, but, like, man, that takes a little bit of shine. Like, he's shooting at Seth from, like, below his sternum was where his release was coming from. Yeah.
Oh, like he had no concept of how to shoot a basketball.
Yeah. Which, you know, fortunately he doesn't have to do in WWE, but man, if there's ever a sport where you have an image to uphold, it's WWE, you know, or sport, activity, form of entertainment. So Tom Brady won, $1 million. Acknowledge him. Last one, Mark Schlereth.
Acknowledge me!
Schlereth said on a podcast that he talked to Aaron Rodgers about his time in New York, and that said Aaron and I had a conversation about when he was with the Jets, and it was how abysmal their running game was, and how schematically it made no sense. I started the conversation, and then Aaron went on for about a 25-minute diatribe on just the run game in New York. I acknowledge Mark Schlereth because apparently, unless he's being hyperbolic, sat there and listened to Aaron Rodgers talk for 25 minutes.
About his hand-selected offensive coordinator, who's never been a good offensive coordinator,
yes,
to provide a running game for him?
Yes.
Not to mention, the biggest issue with Aaron Rodgers and one of the biggest question marks about him with the Steelers is, hey, you don't really have a reputation for caring about or helping out the run game much going back to your days at Green Bay. And now you're with an offensive coordinator who's all about establishing the run and setting up play action and everything. I find that high comedy. High comedy.
Man. That's brutal. Listening to Aaron Rodgers.
I haven't listened to Schlereth talk about this, but I can't get with it if he was not putting any of the blame on Aaron Rodgers there.
Yeah.
Because the offensive coordinator for the Jets was his hand-selected guy.
Yep.
You can't force the team to take a bad offensive coordinator and then complain about the running. And I know he was swapped out this year, but still, that was the nexus of the issue.
We'll get to some of your texts. A lot of people weighing in on the Kevin Durant trade. We'll hear from you guys on that. Brian Geltziler, SiriusXM NBA, contributor for NBA TV. He's excellent. He's going to join us at 8 o'clock, and we're going to talk about the Kevin Durant trade with him, maybe get his thoughts on last night's Game 7 as well. Up next, a ringing endorsement for Cole Popovich. This will get us feeling happy as we head towards training camp. We're just a month out from training camp in the Houston Texans. An endorsement for the O-line coach. We'll get to that as we head towards the top of the hour coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Karam Injury Lawyer Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll circle back to the Kevin Durant trade at the top of the hour. We'll be joined by Brian Geltziler of SiriusXM NBA, NBA TV as well. We'll get his take on what the Rockets did yesterday. Big move. Kevin Durant, now a Houston Rocket. We'll read some of your texts as well. 713-572-4610. Jarrett Patterson was on the Texans All Access, right, Seth, with John and Mark.
Yeah.
With John Harris and Mark Vandermeer, and good conversation. Cole Popovich is one of the most important people coming into training camp this year, right?
Assistant offensive line coach last year, this year's offensive line coach, and a lot of people have wondered, okay, well, how come if the offensive line room was that bad, how come you made the assistant offensive line coach the offensive line coach? My take has always been that, look, the assistant position coach can only do so much. And this clip from Jarrett Patterson about that touchdown drive at the beginning of the third quarter in Kansas City, which was an incredible drive, because it was about an 80-yard drive, but they shot themselves in the foot three times.
Yeah,
too.
50,
they ended up
15 plays, 82 yards, and they burned 10 and a half minutes of clock on that drive.
Yeah, it was a beautiful drive. Yeah. It really, really was. Here's Jarrett Patterson on that drive.
Yeah, I'll say like that week, the 2 weeks prior, we kind of had like a similar run game plan. Yeah. A lot of that was due, you know, Pop. That's yeah. he wanted to, you know, kind of go along with that. I think that's the bodies we have in the room are great for what we were trying to do then.
Yeah.
And it just shows that we have the ability to run the ball. Now, obviously, we've got to be a lot more consistent, sure, and everyone's got to be locked into the communication and how we're going to run the play. But, yeah, I mean, that was, like you're talking about, probably one of our top five, top three, if not the best drive we had all last season. I mean, unfortunately, we didn't win the game, but yeah, that kind of shows that we got the guys for sure.
Yeah. So him talking about Pop there, obviously that's Popovich. They did do a lot of things towards the end of the season where they kind of recognized the strengths of what guys could and couldn't do, and just to put it as simply as possible, they put bodies on bodies. Yep. You know, if a more gap scheme, man scheme, however, like, you don't have to understand what all that means. They put more just, let's get bodies on bodies and drive them. And on that drive, they had a lot of examples of off the offensive line driving the Kansas City Chiefs line off the ball.
Yeah.
And that's encouraging to me, because I think Popovich, maybe more so than Strausser, the offensive line coach last year, or Bobby Slowick, may have had a better feel for recognizing the strengths of the players and what they could do. A lot of that coincided with Titus Howard just being a big, massive dude, being in there at guard. And they were more effective in a lot of regards running the ball because of that. That made me feel good, because he's you could tell by Jarrett Patterson and other quotes we've seen that the offensive linemen themselves really think a lot of Cole Popovich.
Yeah, here's one more from Jarrett Patterson specifically on Cole Popovich.
Yeah, Pop saw, we have a lot of respect for him, and obviously you kind of build a relationship with him the past 2 years. I wasn't really surprised when he got the job, because I know what type of coach he is and what type of guy he is and how much care he has. So he has a lot of respect from all of us in the line room. He respects us, and about him, like, it's just work. And we're not gonna worry about, obviously results are important, but it's, you know, are you doing the technique?
Mm-hmm.
Are you playing hard? You know, all those little things. That's what really matters at the end of the day. You know, result of the play is the result of the play, but how's that play look? It could be, you know, a 99-yard touchdown run. You know, did you do your job though?
Yeah.
That's right. What really matters to him.
It does make me wonder, Seth, as I'm, you know, Jarrett Patterson's not the only offensive lineman for the Texans to talk about how much they admire Cole Popovich. He was in the building last year. He was the assistant O-line coach. His boss got fired. So it does make me wonder, like, what – and the offensive line was clearly not a well-coached unit last year.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think talent was the issue. They weren't well-coached. It just makes me wonder what the dynamic was, that while there is this tremendous amount of respect going on for a coach who was in the room, meanwhile, the offensive line is failing. Like, what was all the chatter going on in that room?
Right, and it's hard when you're an assistant position coach, where you got to be a good soldier and you do what you're told, even if it's not always what you agree with.
Yeah.
That it would be interesting to know what the meeting was like with Cole Popovich at the end of the year, where maybe you encourage, especially after Bobby Slowick is fired, okay, feel free to speak freely.
Yeah.
Just don't worry about whether you're throwing shade at your former boss or anything. Just what do you think the problems were?
Yep.
And I think there were multiple coaches that may have felt that way on the Texans offense last year, and that might not have really agreed with everything Bobby Slowick was doing. As far as the individual offensive linemen themselves, I think if just the center position, I don't think Jarrett Patterson or Drew Scruggs were athletically suited to do a lot of things that they wanted to do. If you think about some of the things that, say, Jason Kelsey or Chris Myers back in the day can do. Smaller guys, but who are super quick and athletic, that's not really Drew Scruggs or Jarrett Patterson. So I am intrigued by if Titus Howard plays at guard as well, that it's going to be more of a mash-em mentality and more of a, like, let's physically impose our will. At the beginning of last year, I would have been skeptical that these guys were capable of that. But because of some of the stuff they did in the postseason at the end of last year, I'm a lot more optimistic about it right now.
I want to skip to this one only because Jarrett Patterson uses a phrase that feels like a taboo four-letter word around here. Here is Jarrett Patterson on the composition of the offensive line now.
Yeah, so we got some, like, really young guys. We also got some really, you know, vets.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting, you know, talking with older guys like Cam, Trent, and Lank, just like how much ball they've played and all the little insights about, you know, I guess D-line play, whether it's run game, pass game, like all those guys have been a tremendous help. And they've been great as well. Like they're super solid, all super great guys to get along with. And I'm excited to have them be able to play next to them this year.
They're vet vets.
This, compared to C.J. Stroud's definition of vet vet for Laremy Tunsil a couple years ago, which was he doesn't do nothing more than he has to. that's there's a big difference. I think when it comes to just establishing the right kind of culture, they needed an infusion of the good kind of vet vets, guys that know that part of your role, like Trent Brown, I'm sure knows that part of his role and the thing that's keeping him around is that I got to be a mentor to these younger guys.
Yeah.
Sometimes the superstars don't feel that way because that's not what they're paid to do. I'm just going to come in and play football. That's my job. It's especially on the offensive line where it's such a technical position. The more guys you can have around like that are 100% willing to help the younger guys, it makes a difference.
Along those lines, we got a text. This is back to Kevin Durant for a second. We're going to talk to Brian Geltzeiler here in about 5 or 10 minutes. SiriusXM NBA. Text message, I do wonder if Durant might be a mentor for Jabari Smith. Similar-ish skill set and role. They actually work out together, if I'm not mistaken, Durant and Jabari Smith. So that process has started already, probably.
Yeah. He's, I mean, it's you think back over the various things Kevin Durant has said in the last year or two, including after games against the Rockets. He's really gushed about the organization and certain players on there. And, yeah, he already has a relationship with Jabari Smith Jr., so that's really one of the nice benefits of all this.
That was one of my other bigger takeaways from yesterday is, like, wow. Been a while since a star player got traded or wanted to come here. The Rockets appear to be back, at least culturally. You know, I'm not saying they're back in terms of competing for an NBA championship, although I think they definitely have the potential to win the NBA title now with this trade. But that it's a little like the Texans, Seth, you know, where if you had said this 2 or 3 years ago that Danielle Hunter or Stephon Diggs or any of these other stars they brought in would want to come here, people would have thought you were crazy. The Rockets and the Texans have been on a very similar arc when it comes to that type of thing. And I think this is now the big indicator, similar to the Texans being able to bring in some star power over the last couple of years, willing free agents willing to come here, or guys willing to approve trades here. That's where the Rockets are now, too.
The people who are most vocally against this trade seem to be, at least from what I've seen, people who are huge Jalen Green fans.
Yeah.
I would just say that the two, if I had to handicap, all right, what's more likely, that Jalen Green develops into the type of guy that can handle being the focus of attention and regularly score more than single digits in the playoffs, or Kevin Durant stays healthy enough to be a huge force in the playoffs? I feel a lot more bullish about Kevin Durant's ability to be a force in the playoffs without health being as much of a concern. Health is the only issue I have with Kevin Durant, age and health.
Yep.
Whereas with Jalen Green, it's a huge wild card as to whether he's genuinely ever going to develop into a guy that can play anywhere near the way Kevin Durant has played in the playoffs.
His is a player development issue, and that's, to me, way trickier than the medicals. I'm with you on that 100%. We'll see what Brian Geltzeiler thinks about it. SiriusXM, NBA, NBA TV. He's going to join us coming up next, and we'll get his thoughts on the Kevin Durant trade. Does he agree with the odds makers? Are the Rockets inside the velvet rope of serious NBA title contenders? That is next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.